Hello, everybody, and welcome.
Welcome to The Nature of Florida, the Sunshine State's only podcast dedicated to its wild and natural places and the fight to preserve them. I'm your host, Oscar Corral, a two-time Emmy Award-winning filmmaker and journalist. I've dedicated much of my career to making films about environmental issues. Tune in each week to hear from a broad range of voices, from scientists to surfers, activists to mermaids, who are working on the front lines to save what's left of Florida's natural beauty and its wildlife.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Nature of Florida podcast. With me here today is a very special guest, Fran Mainella. Fran was the first woman director of the United States National Park Service, and she served from 2001 to 2006 after her appointment and Senate confirmation by President George W. Bush. Before that, she served as Florida's state park director from 1989 to 2001, also as the first woman to serve in that capacity, and she served three governors. And while she was the director, they earned a gold medal award for the best state park system in the United States. So we're lucky to have her with us here today. Welcome, Fran.
I'm so glad to be with you, Oscar. And thank you for all you do with this show, sharing it across our state, but also across the nation, to be able to make sure people understand what great resources we have right here in Florida. But we also need to meet the challenges that there have in each one of those parks.
Well, you have incredible expertise here. You've been the state park director and the national park director for the entire United States. Did you travel a lot in the national parks?
I did. I traveled. I was there for 5.5 years, which may, as a presidential appointment, that's a long stay. The average presidential appointment is 2.5 years. So 5.5 was a long stay. But I did visit 250 of what was then 390 units of our National Park Service. And So I felt so honored. And I focused so heavily on our employees as well as the resources, because I was director after 9/11. I was actually director during that attack.
And I imagine that you saw some incredibly beautiful places while you traveled around the United States. Do you remember any, do any stand out to you? Anything, any of those places burned into your memory at all?
Oh, so many of them are burned into my memory. Most of, you know, your listeners would probably know, you know, about from Everglades to Yellowstone to Yosemite, but Glacier National Park was always one of my very special places. Not only was it an international park, but it also was something that had such diverse, like going to the Sun Road and the ability to deal with the challenges of fire and so many other major issues. But it was a gorgeous and is a gorgeous park.
And in Florida, as the Florida State Park Director, I imagine you've also traveled extensively to different state parks. Any favorites there?
Of course, John Pennekamp, Coral Reef State Park is, in all honesty, that should have been a national park. There's no doubt about it. It meets all the criteria and would have been selected, I'm sure, by our nation had the state not already grabbed it up, which they did very well to make it a state park. But it is a great park. But we have our springs, and I know you've done some work on our springs. They are such an important story in the state of Florida. And also, you know, we have caverns in the Florida State Park system. I mean, people don't think about caves, you know, and being able to go underground and do those kinds of experiences. And we do have those up in the northern part of our state. So we're very diversified. But of course, our beaches, we are so well known for our beaches. And as Mr. Beach would say, he likes to name a lot of our parks as part of those great beaches in the United States.
We definitely have some beautiful beach state parks all over the state of Florida. Down here in Miami, we have Bill Baggs State Park, which is on the southern tip of Key Biscayne, a beautiful state park.
It's a great one. In fact, it was hit heavily by Hurricane Andrew when I was director. And to work to restore that to a better ecosystem, actually, than it was prior to, because it was the positive side of Andrew was that it was a great invasive plant removal.
Right, by force.
All those Australian pines and Malaleuca issues, but particularly Australian pines, were removed. And then we were able to restore, through the help of our congressional delegation, Senator Graham and also Congresswoman Meek and others helped me so much to get monies to be able to do that ecosystem restoration as one of the best ecosystem restorations and wetlands set up at Bill Baggs after Hurricane Andrew. It was really, it's really significant. And we had those, some of the positive things that came out of Andrew.
It's changed so much, that park, since I was young. I remember going there when I was a young, and seeing Australian pines everywhere and thinking that, you know, they were, that's, those are the trees that belong here. They're beautiful. But then after Andrew, they actually planted native trees and native plants. And it looks like a completely different park, still beautiful, just different. And so you see how that opportunity, it was kind of the silver lining of Hurricane Andrew's destruction, that you were able to replant and bring it back to more of its native state.
And remember, those the sea grapes were able to stay even during the huge winds of Andrew. They were able to stay. And that's because they are a native plant that really grabbed onto the soil and really made sure that they helped hold that park together.
Fran, so tell me a little bit about your background. You're now in your 70s, but your thrill and your love of nature started when you were a young woman and a girl. Tell me about that. How did you get into this?
Yeah, I have been in love with the outdoors since I was a child. I used to go outside to play, and you know, I was all outside in nature. And I was also in the scouting, Girl Scouts, started as a brownie. My parents were helped by being leaders of the troop and things like that. And so I love that outdoors. And so being in the outdoors and then being in the scouting, and I went all the way to, you know, to be a senior scout. And then I was recognized as a woman of distinction for the scouting organization after my time as director of the state park system. So it's been a great honor to be involved with scouting. And of course, Boy Scouting also is such an important role. And as State Park Director and National Park Service Director, we work closely with those programs. We had Team Green. We had a number of different programs that work with scouting.
And what did you study in college? How did you continue your interest, and how were you able to channel that into these leadership roles?
Well, I started out, in all honesty, I was going to be a physical education teacher. So my actual undergraduate is in education as a physical education major. And I also took recreation, but recreation as a major back in my day of graduation was not something that was very prominent. But I had worked my way through college. So I've been in the field of park and recreation since 1965, that's 57 years. And I was working part-time as a summer playground counselor in Groton, Connecticut. And that's like as low as you can be. You're cleaning restrooms. You're doing all kinds of things. And, you know, playing four square and doing, you know, taking them on field trips. But that was a real core, and I enjoyed it so much. So I always continued, even though I was a physical education teacher in a middle school and then a high school in Rockville, Connecticut, which is just outside of Hartford. I ended up working summers and weekends with park and recreation. So I continued and always had my hand into park and recreation.
When you were here in Florida, you became a Florida State Park Director. How did you make that jump from teaching physical education to getting into environmental stewardship and conservation?
Yeah. My move to Florida, my husband was a television anchor. And so his name was Lee Manella. And he was on TV both all across the state, actually. He was on different networks. He used to be on the with Ralph Renick from those in the Miami area from long ago might remember that name. He was on that station, and he was on so many stations through the years, and then covered the Capitol from Tallahassee. And so that brought me to Tallahassee. And when in Tallahassee, that's when I moved on to from being a teacher to being full-time park and recreation. I became the first white person to work in an all-Black, historically Black community center called Jake Gaither Community Center. And so that was my introduction into full-time park and recreation. And so from there, I continued to work in the field. I moved on when my husband had a television job change. I moved on to Lake Park, Florida, which is near West Palm Beach. And I became the director for Lake Park, Park and Recreation. And there was only like two other women in the state that were park and recreation directors at that time. And then from there, I was very active in my professional association, what's called the Florida Recreation and Park Association. And when that opportunity to be executive director opened up, I grabbed it and on I went. That took me back to Tallahassee because at the same time, my husband was moving back to Tallahassee. So it was working out. While in Tallahassee as executive director, I was also the lobbyist. So I got to work with Department of Natural Resources, work with the folks, the decision makers that make up the state legislature, the governor, and others. And with that, I learned how important our parks were, talked about economic importance. I talked about enjoyment and resources. And then when the state park directorship came open in Florida, I was able to, after 8 hours of interviewing and competing with two gentlemen in the final group, was able to land the position as director. And from there, I stayed for 12 and a half years, won the gold medal. And then when the opening came up to be National Park Service Director, I went on. Now, I served under George W. Bush as director, but I was also a finalist. And I don't know if you know that, under Clinton. I was in the final two. Bob Stanton, the first African-American, became the director. And he's a good friend of mine. And I was the other, I would have been the first woman. So President Clinton at that point was looking at a change. And so he went with a right decision because Bob Stanton had been there in the Park Service for many, many years, like 30 years. So he knew the system. And he also, as he said, he also knew Hillary. So that helped too.
Right. That doesn't hurt. Yeah. Personally knowing
and
people.
So he went on. But then it came open. And again, this position as National Park Service is actually a professional appointment. Yes, it is presidential, so that means it does have a party linkage, but it is, there's a lot of flexibility. That's all I can say right now. And that, and the Senate, I was unanimously confirmed.
Tell me about the national park assets we have in Florida.
Oh, we have such great assets in the state of Florida. I particularly, as part of my give back today, I am the West Coast chair, which means I'm on the west side over here in the Naples, Bonita Springs area for the Alliance for Florida's National Parks. And they're a great organization. I encourage everyone to get involved with them because it's a way for us to help. And those that we help the following parks: Everglades National Park, Biscayne National Park, Dry Tortugas National Park, and Big Cypress National Preserve. And we are so proud of that. Of course, throughout the state, though, you can go to the north, heading all the way up to St. Augustine, to the Castile and all the things that are there. And we have some wonderful parks within this state. But I tell you, you've got them right here. The gems are right here in your backyard. And the people that want to come to the parks, from even our international visitors, the 63 national parks, there's now 423 park units. The 63 national parks is what is the big draw for those that are coming into this country, but it's also for many of us, we want to visit those national parks because they have the most signature criterias, and to be a national park is a great status.
On that note, and this is something that I brought up in my film, The Fellowship of the Springs, there is talk of possibly designating a certain amount of springs in Florida as the Great Florida Springs and Rivers National Park. And the, one of the areas that they're talking about is the Ocala National Forest area, restoring the Ocalawaha River up north, which has 20 drowned springs right now, and including even Volusia Blue State Park, which has all the manatees in the winter. In other words, carving out a section of North Florida and creating another national park in Florida for the springs and rivers. And it's because the Florida has the largest springs and the highest concentration of freshwater springs on Earth in the whole world. What kind of, what does that do to the status and the protection of a natural feature being a national park?
I can give a really strong example. While I was National Park Service Director, I was able to change the title of Congaree National Swamp. I was a swamp memorial. It was named, it was under a presidential kind of status. But it, we added additional lands to it and could show the significance that it met the high criteria of a national park. We met, we were able to change that name, and that does require Congress to vote on that. That's both Senate and House, as well as a president to sign off, to make it a national park unit. With that, that visitation goes, it like tripled as soon as that happened. But it also means that extra special attention through the National Park Service is always given to make sure our national parks, which are viewed at that highest criteria to be in that, if you're going to get that status, are given the protection dollars and things of that nature that are so important. They also are the ones that can attract sometimes other foundations and outside monies, just like we, the Alliance, give monies to Everglades National Park. Yes, we do do it to Big Cypress, but probably proportionally it's higher to some of our national parks. But we really, you get, there's a, so much more focus, not only by the public, not only by the decision makers, but also by our own employees, staff, and otherwise, that are very protective of all our park units, but particularly our 63 national parks.
I remember reading a couple of years ago under the previous presidential administration that there was another national park added, actually a couple of them. One was New River Gorge in West Virginia.
Yes.
And another one, I think that the Great Lakes Seashores in Indiana, I forgot the exact name of the park, but they were both designated as national parks. And so it, is it a pipe dream that there could be the possibility of another national park in Florida to protect the springs and rivers in this national forest area?
No, I do not think it's a pipe dream. I think that's something, at knowing our springs, they're so significant, so unique, which is all part of the criteria. We have to check acreage. We have to check how, you know, how, you know, because one of the things with national parks, we try to keep them so that they're not too spread out as we go. So that's one of the things that might, you know, be a factor for us to work on. We certainly can't physically move them, but we got to somehow link them together more aggressively. But I think that's all a possibility. And the key is to do that, again, that can't be done through presidential determinations. It can't be done through just the Organic Act. It has to be done through senators, House representatives, voting, and then getting the president to sign off. So it's a, and it's a fairly lengthy, it goes through the National Park Service for criteria. You have to apply, you have to go through, it's quite a bit. It's years of work to do it, but it can happen.
Wow. It's, I mean, it sounds like you know this process well. You saw expansion in national parks.
I did.
And what is it like? How exciting is it for a community to see a national park all of a sudden designated in their community? Or are there people who object to it?
Oh, no. Well, most people want to have it because they understand, they want them for different reasons. Some because of that visitation and the economic stimulation that takes place as a result of a national park being in their premises. It's a status piece because that means there's resources of that great significance that they're labeled a national park and are being recognized by entire Congress and the president to that, to those standards. And so it is it's great status. I did used to have a trivia question back in my day as director and others was the, what's the one state in the nation at the time, up until 2006 or seven, I guess. No, it was after seven. Cause it was anyway, that did not have a national park unit. There's one state in the nation.
I don't know.
Delaware.
Delaware.
And yet that's your first state. So the first state had grabbed up through the state park system all the wonderful sites. And there are so many wonderful sites in Delaware. But I remember at that time, Senator Biden coming and knocking at my door, or I go see him. Of course, he would say, "Director, I need to see you." And wanting a national park unit in Delaware. And he wanted it for economics, wanted it for status, wanted it for the people of Delaware. And I said, "Senator, I'm glad to work with you, but here's the criteria, and it's pretty involved. Where do you see?" I said, you're going to get the state park director at that time was a very good friend of mine. "You're going to get Chaz Salkin to give up a property to me?" And he said, "No, I guess I'm not going to do that." I said, "Well, because all your other ones are sort of spread every which way." And so in the end, I knew when he came in as vice president, they would use going through the presidential not through Congress, they were able to get named a national park unit, not a national park, but a unit. But it is kind of spread out. And it's something that may or may not have met the National Park Service criteria as far as to be a park, national park. But it took care of my trivia question, but it means that the president of today does care about our parks, and he has a wonderful new National Park Service director who I've had a chance to visit with and he's come to see me, and Chuck Sams is doing a great job.
And tell me about the psychological importance of these national parks. There's a new series on Netflix right now, narrated and hosted by former President Obama, who visits national parks around the world and talks about their significance and the meaning that they hold for different communities. Tell me about that significance.
Well, I was very pleased to see the president was doing that. And these national parks, we want supporters to be there for them. They can't be forgotten. They've got to be something that people realize are so important in their everyday lives. And one of the things, and probably this is helping the spurt of interest in our national parks, I know that last year and this year, we are having reservation systems to get in many of our national parks. That's never happened before. We've had it to get into lodges, we've had it to get into other things, but not come across the gate. You might have to wait in line, but it was never, you had to have a reservation. Well, now you do. And part of that is a spinoff. Again, just like Hurricane Andrew had some positive spinoffs, one of the positive spinoffs of COVID has been the greater appreciation of nature, of it being a safe place, a place where you can enjoy yourself and not be quite so worried about being ill. It has the health piece has come out so dominant with our national parks that I think that this is something that you're going to see continue to grow. And I imagine, I haven't seen any of the previews yet, other than just a little trailer piece with the new series that will be on Netflix, but I'll be watching myself to be able to see. But my guess is that appreciation of our nature and our parks is going to increase because we are wanting to be outdoors. And President Obama certainly will help increase that as well.
I think it's interesting that he's narrating a piece on the national parks, because oftentimes there's a lot of discussion about how minorities, Black communities, Hispanic communities are often not as familiar with natural resources in their backyard and national parks, state parks, for whatever reason. They live in urban areas. They don't get out to those areas as often. And so I think that his narration maybe helps bring awareness about those places to some of these communities that may not have had a chance to visit them and get familiar with them.
I think definitely that's the case. I know for me, when I came as director, both of Florida State Parks and then also as National Parks, as the first woman, all of a sudden more women were viewing themselves either as visitors or staff. So we ended up with more women, both in National Parks and Florida State Parks, as park managers and in leadership roles, not even just coming in as the starting position. They might have been in there, but now they could see that they could be in those positions. With President Obama doing this, it will help allow, I think, people of more diverse backgrounds, more people can, you know, you want to see yourself there. And I think that's going to help immensely for our national parks. And I'm so appreciative that he is doing this, and one that I think will be a very positive situation. I remember I didn't work with him as president, but I knew him as a senator. He went on my committees, but he was always kind in the hallways. So,
well, good. You were a member of the Children in Nature Network, right? If I remember correctly, are you still on the board or?
I'm on the what's called the Founders Council now, but I'm still helping them out. In fact, I'll be going to their conference in May, which will take place in Atlanta, coming up I think it's in May, the 9th through the 12th is taking place in Atlanta. But Children in Nature Network and Richard Louv and I are very good friends, the author of Last Child in the Woods, The Nature Deficit Disorder Concept. And he was he saw that well before any COVID or anything has been, is the realization that there is people need to realize they need to get off their phones and get outdoors. It's healthier. It's happy. It's something that is going to continue to increase your ability to succeed in life academically, as well as in health, good health.
I think there's been studies done that show that spending a little bit of time in a natural setting helps restore certain moods, certain kind of positive emotions in people. And I think the Japanese have a term for it. They call it forest bathing. And you know, they'll go out and they'll just stand in a forest or sit in a forest for an hour or two and just sit there and soak it in and then go back to their city lives. And I think that there's definitely some anecdotal truth to that. And in my opinion, you know, going out into nature is very restorative. You know, you're hearing different sounds than you do when you're in an urban setting. You're not hearing air conditioners turning on and cars running and airplanes flying overhead. You know, you're hearing the wind in the trees, and you're hearing birds singing, and you're hearing footsteps, and you're hearing maybe a distant call of some animal. It's just a totally different experience when you're out there. And I think that Florida offers so many places where people can do that. Down in South Florida, of course, you have Big Cypress, you have the Everglades, but you have smaller parks, these state parks too. And so do you think that it's something that children should be more exposed to when they're younger, especially now when there's so much technology distracting them?
Oh, I definitely do. That's one of the reasons we've created something called Wine and Wildlife. In fact, I think you had Joe Wazalewski on your program. And yes. He was one, he's been with us a number of years. He was gone this year because he was traveling across the country, but he's helped us with that. But part of, and Pedro Ramos, who is out, I mean, we are so lucky to have Pedro in this area here for us. And I've worked with him through my whole time as director, and there's many stories there that we don't need to tell now.
Well,
but there's...
Well, maybe you can put in a good word for me. I've been trying to get him on this podcast.
And, actually, I did make sure. I told him I was going on the podcast, and he said, it looks pretty good.
So, oh, good, good. All right.
So maybe Maybe there's a door opening. Maybe able to help you on that. So, but he is outstanding, and we are so lucky to have him as particularly, I think, with him as a Hispanic too, it makes so more people feel welcome too also, but he helps us with all our parks. But he encouraged me, he wanted to help us raise more money. There's never enough money in government to pay for running our parks properly, not to do the educational programs, not to do some of these, you know, some of the hunts, what we're doing, pythons, everything else. All that takes partners. And so the Alliance is my give back to try to help. And Pedro, you know, wanted me to come on and do that. So we created this Wine and Wildlife. It's something that it'll be in February 28th of 2023, and hope people might want to come. It'll be over here in Naples at the Sailing and Yacht Club. But it's a way for us to raise monies. And one of the groups that we typically raise money for is what we call the Swamp Kids. It's, we have a program that sixth graders every sixth grader over here in Collier County gets to go into the park and gets out in the park and does a semi swamp walk type thing. Actually, pretty good with swamp walk for the most part, depending on the weather. And
so, don't they call it slogging?
Slogging, correct.
Right.
Yes, exactly.
I've been out there slogging. It's wonderful.
So those are things we got to get our children out there to do more of it. And I think you've had Jenny on from Everglades and stuff. And of course, our own people, our staff for the Park Service at Everglades, Biscayne, and Dry Tortugas, all are very ready to help the young people. And if we need to start, and as Richard Liu would say, he wrote that book, Vitamin N, making sure right from that early childhood onward, and that's what Children in Nature Network tries to promote, is making sure we get all ages out and connected to nature, because that will be, the science shows you'll be more successful in your careers, in your not just health, but in careers and other things of that nature, if you are outdoors and being able to connect to playing in nature.
Now, Frank, correct me if I'm wrong here, but I believe that Miami or South Florida, but Miami in particular, is the only major metropolitan area in the world that has two national parks on either side of it.
I should know that answer, but I don't know. But I bet if you've researched,
I've done some research, anecdotal.
I bet you're right.
I've skimmed some Google pages and looked around, and I believe Miami's the only major metropolitan area in the world that is sandwiched between two national parks. I have a theory that Miami should be a very environmentally conscious place,
right?
And yet it is not, and it's not because there's anything wrong with Miami. I think it's because Miami is a major urban area, and major urban areas are so populous, and it's so difficult to get a large part of that population out to the parks and get them familiar. That education, starting with young people is so important, because it awakens them and it opens their eyes at a young age to what they have around them and these precious places that they can visit at any time. I think it's an incredible opportunity to educate people when they're young, and to get them familiar with these assets. And Miami is, Miami has the Everglades, Big Cypress nearby, and Biscayne National Park, and then a little further south, Dry Tortugas. But what luck we have, and what incredible good fortune we have to have these places near us. And so how important do you think it is for these young people to go out there we teach young people about so many different things, to teach them about their own backyard and the precious nature they have around them?
Well, I think it's critical. I think it's important for our future, not only for the Miami area, but for all of us across our nation, to make sure our children understand that going outdoors, and this is also why I'm on the Children in Nature Network. I still stay involved with them. I'm on the Alliance. I'm on the Institute for Parks Board. It's all about helping others to realize, including your children, that it's okay to get dirty outside. It's okay to, they will be more successful by giving them some of that outdoor time than just study. And yes, you got to study, but you got to combine. And that's why Children in Nature Network has so many programs, and so much is free for teachers and everything else. If you go online for the Children in Nature Network, they have great programs. The Alliance has great information, as well as so many others of our local groups. But the parks are going to require us to get them outdoors. And that's why we have tried so hard to connect our children with nature, but also to remember we seasoned adults, which are me in the 70s, that we continue to need to be outdoors and need to be able to understand how important it is to get up off that sofa, put away that phone for a little while. Doesn't mean put it away completely. It just means put it away for a little while and be able to go out. Hmm. And I think that's something that's going to be critical for the well-being of all of us. And it really is something that I think is critical for our future.
Fran, looking forward, tell me about your sense of the future. You're somebody, I kind of sense that you're an optimist. You're somebody who, who you've led major organizations that have to do with protecting natural resources. What do you see looking forward? There are so many issues that are threatening and plaguing natural places, not just in the United States, but around the world. Do you think we'll turn that corner? Do you think humanity will recognize that these are places that can disappear and will react in time? What do you see in the future?
Well, again, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, it's happening already. We're starting to see it. That is why there is such a demand to go to our parks. People are realizing that that's a safe place for them to go. Yes, there might be animals that they don't always understand, or there might be other things, but it's a safe place. What did we do during COVID? We were sitting outside having our meals. We were sent outside. We stayed in our neighborhoods and played. And so I think you're going to see, we have a golden opportunity right now to get on board this trend that I think is going, that's going to encourage us to further go outdoors. Now, are there challenges? Yes, but we have to continue to figure out ways. We have to use even our technology as a way to connect the young people with that outdoors. Like one of the things I did while I was a director, I created the Web Ranger program. Ranger program was where you go online and do everything online. And then you were supposed to go to the park to get your badge. You could get printed out, you know, online, but it was also where you could go to the park and get a badge. And so trying to use different techniques to guide people outdoors is going to be, I think, I'm very optimistic. I think the window is great right now. Again, always look for that positive that comes out of a negative situation. And I think COVID has given us the positive realization for people that maybe didn't ever think about it that way before. And this is in urban settings more than any place else, I think, that getting outdoors is important. And remember, you don't always have to go to a national park. You know, there's butterfly gardens. There's other things that are in urban settings. And you also have the opportunity to link to your Dade County has great parks, Naples over here, Collier County, all the local parks are good. Your state parks, East Coast of Florida, I mean, particularly going down to the Keys, basically they're all parks. Yeah. And there's such a great opportunity to connect outdoors. And I think we've got a window of opportunity that I hope all of us will jump aboard that train to help us move all of us forward to be more healthy, happy, and have a greater future.
Fran, any final thoughts?
I just don't want to thank you again for having me on, but it's important to get out, use every type of media, social media, everything else to figure out how do we reach everyone. I even lead some trips for a company on this side of the state called Trendy Tours. Just because I want to, and it's only going to Everglades and, you know, Big Cypress and a couple of that to realize that's, you can get from Naples to Big Cypress in 45 minutes. You know, it's not that far because a lot of folks are saying, well, that seems so far away or, you know, and the same thing on Miami side, you know, there's places to go. How do we get out into those parks or is there other transportation methods or what do we do? So I think we've got windows here and we need to take that little extra energy, particularly those of us that have the contacts or wherewithal to find ways to get people out and do it.
I agree, Fran. I agree so much. Thank you for being on this podcast with me and for this wonderful conversation. And I'm also optimistic.
This episode of the Nature of Florida podcast was brought to you in part by the Everglades Foundation, the Felburn Foundation, the Fish and Wildlife Foundation of Florida, and Explica Media. If you're enjoying this podcast, remember to subscribe on our website, thenatureofflorida.buzzsprout.com. That's thenatureofflorida.buzzsprout.com, or find us on your favorite platform and follow us on Facebook and Instagram.